So during the sitting, I was busily cultivating the perception that you are not here to judge me, that you are all my dear friends, and that you are here to encourage my practice as I am here to hopefully encourage yours. And that the 3% bar that Gene referred to last week is set pretty low, so I think I'm okay today. For those who weren't here last week, Gene was talking about someone's instructions regarding how to listen to a Dharma talk, and just sort of take it in without trying too actively to remember everything that's being said. And if you leave with about 3% of the take-home message, you're doing pretty good. So hopefully you'll have about 3%, if not a little more, to take home. So again, these are kind of Dharma thoughts. I'm certainly not here to teach. It was just a wonderful opportunity for me to investigate a topic that I was very interested in, and hopefully share some of what I came up with you, and I hope you find it interesting.
Who are you?
Oh, thank you, Jean. You always bring me back to the practicalities. I'm John Fries, a member of the Bellingham Insight Teaching Corps. And Jean also talked about intention last week and our intention for the practice period. So I kind of wanted to keep in mind what my intention for this talk was. And basically it is to leave you with some thoughts regarding sense consciousness, how we experience the world around us, and perception, and to try to make it a little clearer that these are both simply events in the mind and not actual attributes of objects out there. And also how we, the fact that how we perceive the world is influenced by the qualities of our mind, where our mind is at any current moment. The thought world that we inhabit influences how we perceive the world. And finally, perception's role in causing suffering, since we're looking at all of this through a Buddhist lens. Essentially, I want to leave you with kind of a healthy disrespect for your mind and the deceptions that it can play on all of us. And again, hopefully leave you with some interesting food for thought and investigation in the coming week. So I'm thinking maybe I might be more comfortable sitting down. Oops. Maybe I'll sit here. I wanted to do that away from the Buddha. Definitely no disrespect meant. So, what came up for you there?
Hey, what came up for you?
That was a sound. Contact at the sense door of the ear. Did anything come up for anyone?
You didn't.
And if I did, would that have been a problem?
People do it all the time. It's just not usually that
flat. Or that public. So,
I was wondering what the story was. Why?
Oh. Did anyone actually believe that was real rather than a whoopee cushion, even for a second?
Yeah. Okay.
And And I'm guessing for that second, there's a whole lot that maybe came up. We added on a lot to that just bare sense data of sound. So,
waiting for more sense data.
Here's another sound. Perceive it quite differently. There's certain labels that we attach to the fart and certain labels that we attach to the ringing of the bell. And those mental labels are our perception of that raw sense data, those sense impressions. And those labels can be very subtle, they can be very, you know, in your face. I just want to get you thinking about, first of all, what sound really is, just in sort of a physical sense. So both of these sounds were simply pulses of air, and air, that pulse of air reached your ear, a tiny membrane started vibrating, some tiny bones next to the membrane started vibrating. Those sent a whole long chain reaction of neurons, cells, firing and creating little chemical signals to their neighbors. And that made its way all the way to a particular section of the brain that interprets those chemicals that those neurons send to it. And then the brain interprets all of that, and at that moment, you first are conscious of ringing, in this case. And that is when that ear consciousness of ringing arises. It's not like the ringing is part of the bell and it came from the bell to your ear. There was no ringing. It was just a pulse of air. The ringing is only exists in our mind. It's the way we interpret that pulse of air that was the result of the material composition of this bell, its shape, the force with which I struck it, sent that pulse of air, and that's all that was. The ringing is a momentary mental event in our mind. So that ear consciousness arises in our mind. And it's momentary, it comes, stays for a while, and passes away. But the point, again, is not that ringing is not of the bell in any meaningful sense. And yet we attribute that ringing to the bell, and it's part of how we perceive the bell. The same sort of explanation could be given for sight. And it's actually kind of interesting when you think about it. Here's a red clipboard. You look at that, and you perceive it as red. And yet, if it's anything, it's not red. I mean, red is the frequency of light that the surface of this clipboard rejects and sends that off away with you out there, and it strikes our retina, and again, you get that neural firing chain reaction reaches part of the brain, and the brain interprets that particular frequency of light as red, and we attribute it. We attribute that quality of redness to the clipboard, and yet that's the frequency of light it rejected. So how, in what meaningful sense is that clipboard red? And yet that's part of our perception of the clipboard. So it's strange. So our experience of the world is a composite of this these sense impressions, these sights and sounds and smells and touches. And all of these sense impressions that are interpreted in the brain cause eye consciousness and ear consciousness, and, smell consciousness or nose consciousness. And that nose and ear and eye consciousness, again, is simply a mental event in the brain that arises and passes and is not in any meaningful sense an attribute of the object that we make contact with. And yet, that event is caused by sense contact. Sense organ, sense object, eye consciousness, sense contact. And that sense contact causes the eye consciousness in my brain to occur, in my mind. So the point is we're not looking at the world through a beautifully clear pane of glass. We're interpreting the world through our senses. And the situation gets worse. I wanted to be able to project this on the wall or something, but if you take a look at, I'll just try and have a few of you look at it this way and then I'll pass it around. You can see there are two squares, A and B. And I'm going to pass it around, but I want you to look at those two squares, A and B, like this, compare them, and then put a sheet of paper over it and look at them again. This, to me, is the most extraordinary optical illusion I've ever encountered. And even when you know what the truth is, you cannot convince yourself that they are not identical, or actually convince yourself that they are identical, I mean. Anyway, so while I talk, go ahead and take a look at that. So the brain is not passive, and that's what this is meant to illustrate. There's a lot of unconscious processing going on in the brain. Our perception is influenced by many things. It's influenced by context cues, which is what's happening here. We're perceiving the relative shades of those two squares by looking at the shades of the squares next to them and the fact that one is in the shade of that green cylinder. And our brain just automatically, on autopilot, unconsciously takes these cues and tries to make sense of what you're looking at. Sometimes doesn't do a very good job. But the brain is also, our perception of the world around us is also influenced by learning, memory, expectations, what's motivating us, our emotional state at the moment, the particular thought world that we inhabit. All of these things influence the way we perceive the world around us. A great example of this is, was it Eugene or was it Carolyn McLaughlin, who gave the example of being out in the woods, hiking, beautiful forest path, and heard a sound, the sound of running water, a river nearby. And then walked a little further and eventually realized it was a highway. The expectation when you hear a sound sort of like that when you're in the woods is, okay, there's a river nearby. And the sort of cues that you're being given in the woods make you tend to believe that that sound is a river, but actually it was the highway. Another example I came upon very serendipitously while preparing this talk, while sitting next to my daughter who was reading The Lord of the Rings, reading just a upside down page that she had it open to, and it just was a perfect example of how our perception is affected by our emotional state and our expectations, etc. This is Sam and Frodo and Pippin are getting a ride with a farmer in his cart, and they're being pursued by the dark riders, the Nazgul. Suddenly they heard what they had all been dreading, hoofs on the road ahead. The sound was coming towards them, clop, 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 clop. The rider was nearly on them. "Now then," said the farmer, throwing the reins to Sam and striding forward. "Don't you come a step nearer. What do you want, and where are you going?" "I want Mr. Baggins. Have you seen him?" said a muffled voice. But the voice was the voice of their friend, Mary Brandybuck. A dark lantern was uncovered, and its light fell on the astonished face of the farmer. "Mr. Mary," he cried. "Yes, of course. Who did you think it was?" said Mary, coming forward. And as he came out of the mist and their fears subsided, he seemed suddenly to diminish to ordinary hobbit size. Their perception of this figure changed dramatically depending on their emotional state. So again, the point is we do not see the world through clear glass, but rather through lenses tinted by the quality of our mind in the moment. It's even a little worse. Feedback occurs. Our perceptual experiences shape our beliefs. And those beliefs shape our subsequent perceptions of the world, which then strengthen our beliefs. And so it's just kind of a vicious cycle where we eventually just see what we expect to see, or what we're used to seeing, or what we believe to be true. So we're at the Dharma Hall. What's the point of all this? You know, what's the Buddha lens? The Buddha lens is this. In the suttas it says, it is only dukkha and the cessation of dukkha that I teach. Dukkha meaning suffering. So we should, you know, this is all very interesting, but we should not be concerned with this sort of the epistemology of all of this, you know, questions of, are we really seeing the world as it is? Or is it even possible to know, you know, what the world is really like? Those aren't the questions we should be asking. Rather, the question is our perception or our distorted perception of the world around us causing dukkha, causing suffering? We should be asking questions like, is our perception of this person or this object or this place at this moment stirring up unwholesome mental states like anger, strong desire, irritation? And if the answer is yes, then we should act, because unwholesome mental states will always lead to ill. So, since that is the question that we should be asking ourselves, I wanted to say just briefly how sense impressions can lead to suffering, to dukkha. The basic problem is that everything we come into sense contact, everything that we come into sense contact with, we make about us. We kind of drag ourselves into everything. We do what's called self-referential thinking. We look at an object, we have a perception, and then we say, how is this relevant to me? I'm the perceiver here, I'm the experiencer here. How is this relevant to me? And then we react to whatever label that perception places on that object or that person or that place. So we take these momentary mental events that exist only in our mind, only our you know, these, as I explained earlier, the eye consciousness arising and passing. And we take those momentary mental events and use them to give meaning and significance to objects out there. Again, we attribute that event somehow to the object out there. We project our own value judgments, like beautiful, irritating, or sad, onto external phenomena, as if these were actual qualities of the object. And then again, we react to that, and that can cause us sadness, it can cause us annoyance, it can cause us strong desire, because we now have a relationship with that object. We've allowed that object to make inroads into our mind. And when we label and experience the things of the world as beautiful, irritating, sad, we react and become the victims of those distorted perceptions that we explained how those arise. And that leads to suffering. So, we could label the sound of a river in the distance as peaceful. We could label the sound of a highway in the distance as noisy and annoying. Label the smell of a chocolate brownie as delicious, and that could lead to strong desire for that chocolate brownie. The point is that none of those labels are really right or wrong. They're almost arbitrary. And there's nothing intrinsically peaceful or annoying or sad about any of the objects out there. It's just all the story that we slap onto them. So the bottom line is perception is a conditioned momentary event in the mind that arises with contact between sense and sense object out there. We see the world not through clear glass, but through lenses tinted by the quality of the mind in that moment. Meaning and significance, for example, desirable, annoying, sad, that we give to sense objects are just something added on. They are not an intrinsic attribute of that object, or person, or place. They exist only in our consciousness. But believing in the validity of those attributes opens us up to suffering. So what's the alternative? Actually, John Robinson shared this with us the other day, read from the suttas. This was the Buddha's instructions to a man named Bahiya. He said, when in the seen is merely what is seen, when in the heard is merely what is heard, when in the sensed is merely what is sensed. Just this is the end of suffering. So those are my Dharma thoughts.